From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
When I spoke to naturalist and nature writer Nancy Lawson recently about her adventures in wildscaping at her Maryland garden, there was one topic in particular I wanted to double back to and dig in deeper to: her tactics for fighting unwanted weeds and invasives as we loosen up parts of our landscapes with more native plants. So that's our topic today: how to give the desired plants the edge, including some of the native perennials that have proven to be Nancy's allies in outcompeting the undesirables. So more in a moment, but first these messages.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach made possible from Timber Press, the leader in fine garden books. The World of Laura Ingalls Wilder by best-selling author Marta McDowell. The revealing exploration of Wilder's connection to the landscapes of the American frontier is a must-read for Little House on the Prairie fans. From booksellers everywhere. From High Mowing Organic Seeds, the first independently owned farm-based seed company proudly serving organic gardeners and farmers with 100% organic and non-GMO vegetable, herb, and flower seeds. HighMowingSeeds.com/awaytogarden.
Nancy Lawson is author of The Humane Gardener and more recently of Wildscape. In that book, she stresses that we're not alone out there and promotes animal-friendly planting and maintenance strategies. She helps us tune into everyone whose home it is through a mix of findings from scientific research and her own intimate moments of discovery spent making her own wildscape. Thanks for coming back to talk to me again, Nancy. Much appreciated.
Thanks for having me. It's great. And this is one of my favorite topics too.
You like weeds, huh?
I like native weeds.
Okay. Yeah, because I've just gotten past having a garden open day. And so it's sort of that, you know, the spring drill of getting the garden, whether you're literally having visitors or not, but getting the garden kind of open, you know, mulched and cleaned up and whatever.
Right.
And now it's time, and I bet a lot of people are in the same boat. It's like, it's time to sort of double back and fight some of the bigger fights that I know we all face in one spot or another in our gardens. Like,
right.
You know, we all have something. But what are some of your challenges there at your place? You have a couple of acres, similar size place that I do, and you've been there a long time. What are some of your like constant undesirable companions?
Yeah, well, the stilt grass is one of them. Because it likes to come up. You know, it can make itself at home in tiny little pockets at pretty much anywhere. But another one is that I recently had a very successful little battle against was mugwort. Yeah, we inherited mugwort with some heirloom asparagus that my husband's grandfather had in his garden, and my mother-in-law gave us some, and I had a feeling it was going to come with mugwort, and it did, and we didn't manage it, and so it became like a 30 foot by 10 foot space of mugwort after
yes.
a time.
Yes, and that's an artemisia, isn't it? I think
isn't it?
So it's a perennial artemisia, and it's rhizomatous, I guess. Is that correct also?
So there's these big orange rooted mats when it really gets going. And I've had it in other places where there are already lots of plants. And in those places, it's very easy to just pull. And but this was, you know, a place we had specifically dug out for asparagus and not put much other things. And it was always just kind of my last thing to get to because there was so much else to do. And whenever I would try, there were lots of ladybugs in there. And then one year I noticed that there were walnut trees coming up in it, and there were black raspberries that actually really seemed to be competing with it. And so that gave me some encouragement. Those were like my bright spots to start from. And I guess it was like right before the pandemic when I started just taking it on for real. And I did a combination of smothering it with cardboard and wood chips. And then also, but I don't want to just do that because then stuff comes right back, you know? So So I also started planting other things that grew in a similar way, like Jerusalem artichoke, mountain mint, these things that could really take over the ground in the shady part, the golden ragwort, the robin's plantain, and these other things that would really kind of either shade out germination of the mugwort seeds or compete with directly with the roots.
And so how did you kind of figure that out? I mean, do you know what I mean? Did you just kind of observe who was doing a good job elsewhere? Or, you know, how did you kind of, like, where do you get that kind of insight?
So I kind of started just looking at this sort of subject matter, I guess probably about 12 or 13 years ago, when I had garlic mustard a lot in a certain area, and I left some plants out of golden ragwort, and I was going to give them to friends. And then I came back the following spring. This was in like the fall, I guess. I had dug them up, and I found that they had rooted out of the pots and into the golden ragwort, and saw they were competing with it. And then I learned about plants like clearweed, that actually there's been research showing that they can directly compete with garlic mustard chemically.
That's a great plant, Pilea pumila.
Yeah.
Pumila. Yeah, it's a great plant, and people think it's a weed because it has that weed suffix in its common name, but it's an important for certain moths or butterflies, I believe. It's a host plant, and it's a great plant.
It's
so
beautiful.
It's interesting to hear that it also has scientifically proven ability to help us with these types of problems, you know.
Yeah, like it can go head to head. And so I guess, you know, seeing that sort of research makes you wonder, well, what other plants can do this? And obviously the ragwort can do it. And then kind of thinking about not just their chemical properties, but their growth habits. And one of the reasons that the ragwort does it, at least where I live, is that it's also usually pretty evergreen. And so it's competing probably not only chemically, but it also has this ability to leaf out before anything else, or already be leafed out, depending on where you live. And so it can shade out germination of the garlic mustard seed.
And that's how a lot of our what are now considered invasive plants in many areas that came from other nations, that was one of their traditional sort of edges, why they became so successful when they came here. And similarly, where our plants went to other places, you know, as plants have moved around the world, is that they frequently leaf out sooner than the local stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's a great, you're right, that's a great, so looking for those types of qualities, but not in an invasive, I mean, obviously, looking for those types of qualities that can help to stifle the unwanted, I see. So that's what you were kind of doing.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And
I mean, some of these, like, some of these weeds that you've mentioned, like, they have different tactics for succeeding as weeds. I mean, like the stilt grass, you know, it's a warm season annual. It makes a lot of seeds per seed head, a lot. They can reside in the soil for 3 to 5 years and stay, you know, viable, and, you know, I mean, there's a lot of qualities that make it succeed and outsmart us, you know.
Right. Which you have to admire. I mean,
well, weeds are, yes, they're incredible. And I mean, garlic mustard has so many tactics. It's allelopathic. It exudes a chemical into the area where it grows that deters other plants from getting a foothold. It's got a great deep root. It comes up early. It's probably evergreen even here in zone, is evergreen even here in zone 5, you know.
Right.
I mean, it's a prodigious sower of seeds. You know, these are these tactics. And so how do we one better them, right? Is that what you're kind of looking for? Plants that are even smarter?
Yeah, or at least they can hold their own, you know, so that if you clear an area and then you replant right away, you can at least get a leg up that way. Like a lot of them, it won't actually out compete by themselves, but maybe together
Right.
with other ones, they'll hold the ground from further encroachment. And so,
Right. Right. And you're still weeding. I mean, it's not that you're not pulling out garlic mustard, for instance, or in some cases, like you said, using a cover like cardboard or something to stifle things. It's not that you're not doing that. It's that you're not only relying on that.
exactly. Like it went in the golden ragwort is pretty unique in that I did still weed just the first like year or two, and then I didn't have to. I mean, it just pretty much does this wonderful takeover. But yeah, some of the other ones it takes longer to keep weeding out, but it's like less and less each year, and that's so rewarding.
Right. And these are in areas. So describe golden ragwort to us, like as a plant. What does it look like? What does it do? Kind of what's its.
Yeah, Pacara aurea, and I think Ovada also up where you are, right, is native, has roundish leaves that grow densely together. The plants root underground really quickly, but then they also spread by seed. And so it's a beautiful ground cover all season and often all year. And I love it because the birds love to forage in there too, and the rabbits make nests in there. And there's a specialist bee that goes to the flower, which is maybe about a foot tall, and bright yellow, and just lights up the whole place in spring. And, you know, it's really pretty with plants like phloxes and purple, what is it, phlox subulata and stolonifera, and the woodland phlox dervaricata, and so what I started doing with it too is you know, planting it under trees. Like I'll start there under the red buds, under the chokeberries. When I do tree cages, when I plant new trees, now I put a lot of ground covers like that, or sometimes I'll even put bigger plants like rudbeckias in there with the tree cage as a way to kind of green mulch it instead of mulching it.
So right from the start, when you've disturbed, in order to plant a tree, you've disturbed the soil, you're right away planting some ground cover to be with that new tree.
Yes.
Yeah. 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 So not letting that, because what does a weed love more than anything? It loves the ground disturbance.
Right.
So you're trying to get ahead of it. Do you have other perennials that in the way that the Pacara, the golden red, do you have others that you have found have served this kind of role particularly?
Yeah. Well, the sedges, some of the sedges, they don't grow quite as vigorously, but pretty vigorously, like the blue sedges and the Appalachian sedge. And and then I like things like tufted hair grass is evergreen. And that really holds the ground against anything. I don't know if that's the reason or if there are other reasons.
Well, leaving any blank space at ground level, obviously, you know, because you can, we if we go and we pull out all our garlic mustard, and we leave a blank canvas.
Right.
I mean, what's going to happen? Who knows what's coming next? More garlic mustard, and then who knows what else?
Yeah.
Right. So we have to be there. It's the 1-2 punch, right? We have to be there with it. Right.
Right. And so depending on where you are, like some of them are such great host plants and pollinator plants too, like Golden Alexander for the black swallowtail.
The Zizia. Is that Zizia?
Yeah. Once that gets going, wild basil, wild ginger, of course, in the shade.
I was just going to say the Acerum canadense. I think the wild ginger is one of the great native ground covers. And it's, for me, again, even in a very cold zone, it's not evergreen, like the European version of Acerum is more sort of evergreen leaf, but it's thick, dense at ground level, controllable. It's not like it goes crazy and takes over your whole place, but it really makes a great ground cover that not a lot of stuff gets into. So if you have, as you say, under trees or a shrub border or something, where you want the ground not, you know, you don't want to have to be weeding, you know, 50 times a year in that area. You want a dense ground cover to close the ground and also have some beneficial, you know, elements to it, features to it. Yeah, that's a great one, I think.
Yeah. And I remember reading this tip from Barry Glick at Sunshine Farm,
yes,
in West Virginia. Yeah, so about planting wild ginger under pawpaw trees because they have the same or similar pollinators, flies.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So I went down to transplant some under the pawpaws this year because I've been meaning to do it for years. And I put the pawpaws as bare roots many years ago, like down, far down in the field, just right into the turf grass. And, you know, over the years, there was garlic mustard under there and stilled grass. And this year, when I went to put the ginger, I saw that it's now almost all violets. So that's another really nice, you know, recruitable one you don't even have to plant. And I guess because the pawpaws shaded out the turf entirely and the other stuff, it's just all violets now under them.
And that's, those cool. are such, you know, and I think a lot of people still even think of them as weeds, and they're such helpers and they're such supporters of all the fritillary butterflies, I think, use them. And so they're such, as host plants, and they're such charming and tough, but it's like we have to recondition the way we look, but especially in these, you know, it's going to be a little looser, a lot looser, but right. it's also going to be functioning and supporting to beneficial insects and other animals, and it's going to hopefully, like we're talking about, keep out some of the really unwanted things like that mugwort, like that stilt grass, like those, you know, the really unmanageable ones that are right. non-native and big trouble. So any other perennials that you found that are doing a good job at sort of, again, I shouldn't say out competing, but helping take up and keeping things, you know, that have the strength to to resist some of the other.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I love elephant's foot. Do you have that?
I don't think I know what that means. What that
Elephantopus carolinianus.
No.
And there's another one too, related. And that is a really dense ground cover too. Not all year, but all season. And so it really holds the ground, and it has these little small purple flowers that buckeyes and other little butterflies love in the late season. Mm-hmm. And that's good for shade or part shade. I have it even in a fair amount of, you know, sun, part sun too. And then lyre leaf sage is so pretty, and it'll just, it just goes anywhere. You can't even walk on it. It won't flower as tall, but
I don't think I know that common name either.
That's Salvia lyrata.
Lyrata, okay.
It has the cutest little leaves, and actually, you know, that's kind of evergreen. It's sort of like ever purple. It kind of disappears. You can't really see it very well, but mm-hmm. it can keep the leaves all year sometimes. White wood aster, that tends to get browsed in certain spots, but if it's sort of protected with other plants around it.
Well, you know what, with the asters, all of them here get browsed, but and even like the woodchucks and the rabbits love them, for instance. And so, because I don't have deer, I have a fence, but what I think of it when I see that, instead of like getting hysterical, I just think it's the Chelsea chop. Do you know what I mean? It's
right.
that pruning technique. It's cut, being cut back in spring, you know, when it's partway grown. So it's going to delay flowering a little bit and make a flower at a slightly shorter size. But the thing, I'm glad you mentioned the white wood aster, and really to me, even other native asters.
Yeah.
Early in my garden career, I used to pull them out of areas. You know, I they would sow in and I would pull them out because they seemed weedy. I mean, that was my mindset, you know, 30 plus years ago.
Right.
And now I'm like thankful that they're doing that, and like the violets. And I think it's an important, you're just making me think it's like an important mind shift that we have to do is to make friends with, and do you know what I mean? And,
yes.
And appreciate. Yeah. What about northern sea oats? Have you found that to be a good helper? Or
I love that. Yeah.
Chasmanthium latifolium, the northern sea oats grass.
Yeah. And it actually, you know, I don't know about where you are, but here people think oftentimes, oh, it's too aggressive. But that is something that if you've got it with a lot of other natives, and it kind of grows alongside certain ones, or it even protects them. I've found, you know, we'll see what happens over the years, but I've had it for quite a while now, and I have some plants, some perennials mixed in that do get browsed now, like wild bergamot and even echinacea and stuff. Mm-hmm. And they are doing well among the sea oats. The sea oats also really help with the Japanese silkgrass. Now, I think that some people, it's very hard to tell the difference until you get to know them when they first come up. The sea oats and the silkgrass can look pretty similar.
Yes.
You just have to do it for a little bit and then you get an eye for it. But that in combination with a native grass nibblewill, which I love, it's just very thin leaved and a shade grass, and it's very maligned too online by kind of like mainstream sources and lawn experts and stuff. But
right.
It's a really good one for holding the ground also against stilt grass. And so I love those plants. And sea oats is a host plant too for some butterflies and moths. Yeah.
And it does have the most incredible seed heads of anything I've ever seen. I mean, yeah. They look like a flattened pine cone or something. It's like these just incredible, and they kind of take on a coppery color or something in the fall. I mean, it really is quite a beautifully constructed architectural little creature.
It really is.
Yeah.
In the wind, it makes a pretty sound. Yeah.
Yes. I think when we did a recent New York Times story about your wildscape book and so forth and together. And I think you mentioned something, blue mist flower. Is that, and you also mentioned false nettles. Tell me about those two. Have those been ones that have been helping you with battle?
So blue mist flower actually came up in a sneeze weed plant that I bought at a local native nursery here. And so I never intentionally bought it, although I would have eventually, I'm sure, you know, but it looks kind of like hardy ageratum.
Yes.
It's really beautiful, a purple, fuzzy flowers. And it tends to not be browsed by deer. I think it has some alkaloids in it that they don't find tasty. And it seeded here from that original pot, and then it eventually went out into the field where the stiltgrass is, and it's been making ever widening circles in the stiltgrass. It doesn't seem to mind growing among it at all. Yeah. So I just go and I pull around it, and I do that with the false nettle too. It does the same thing. And every year, if I just pull some more around it, then those things can reseed into the bare spots that I make and keep on spreading.
So the false nettles is bomeria, I think. And I think the mist flower is, the blue mist flower is clinium?
Yes.
Clinium?
Colistinum, yeah.
Colistinum, yeah. I always had trouble with that one because it has so many vowels, and I could never say both the genus and the species have so many. So we just have a few minutes, and if this sounds appealing to people to sort of adjust how they see some plants, like the violets and the asters, and leave some of them, and again, like letting some plants like the false nettles and the blue mist flower and so forth, get going in a patch of something that's troublesome, and then weeding out the troublesome stuff around it and letting it take the good thing, take more territory. Like where, besides your book, besides Wildscape, are there other places to do homework about this or to learn more about this? Did you use like field guides or kind of, any other tips in the last couple of minutes?
Yeah. I mean, so while I was, you know, sort of like exploring these things, I think Larry Weiner came out with his book Garden Revolution a few years ago, and he talks about this, I think, in that book somewhat. And then Planting in a Post-Wild World, of course, talks about, you know, using natives to hold the ground and such. And
so, Thomas Rayner and Claudia West's book. Okay, good, good suggestions. Thank you.
Yeah. And you know, and I think one of the things over the years that I've just learned is that people get really excited by this topic. I mean, I wrote something on my site in like 2016 or something, and the amount of comments on there was incredible compared to other things that I've written. And it's because people either want to know what's going to outcompete something, or they want to share their experiences. And so I've just learned a lot from conversation with other people too. And I started, you know, experimenting with what they told me and including their stuff in my handouts and such. And I mean, you know, shrubs and trees are really important to this too, helping to shade things out, or the suckering shrubs, you know, because we have a problem with some of the invasive suckering shrubs. And so
we'll have to talk about this again, because we've run out of time. But I so appreciate, Nancy Lawson, you're taking time today to join me to sort of go a little deeper into this topic. And I hope we'll talk again soon. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach made possible from Timber Press, the leader in fine garden books. The World of Laura Ingalls Wilder by bestselling author Marta McDowell. The revealing exploration of Wilder's connection to the landscapes of the American frontier is a must-read for Little House on the Prairie fans, from booksellers everywhere. From High Mowing Organic Seeds, the first independently owned farm-based seed company broadly serving organic gardeners and farmers with 100% organic and non-GMO vegetable, herb, and flower seeds. HighMowingSeeds.com/awaytogarden.
And thanks to all of you for tuning in. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Stitcher or Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com and on Facebook and on Instagram as @awaytogarden. And happy gardening and fighting weeds meantime.